Welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors, where each episode we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show, we are once again heading to France and looking at the animated film The Triplets of Belleville by director Sylvain Chomet. Returning on the show today to talk about The Triplets of Belleville is Professor Marie Westhaver. Professor Westhaver, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I know last time we watched the show, we saw a movie, My Name is Khan. You liked it, and I wasn't particularly fond of it. Now I can finally say I really like this film. I definitely like it without any reservations.
The artwork in it is just so wonderful. Even if the story was terrible, you can still enjoy the art. Mm-hmm. But now, the story's pretty good, too. Yeah.
And I was thinking, looking at it, this isn't, I wouldn't quite say this is for kids. It's PG-13, and it's not like it's South Park where they're saying the F word or anything, but there's some stuff in there that may not be quite suitable for children.
It's not a kid's story. It starts off being about a kid, but it's definitely not a kid's story. Yeah, it has some creepy undertones and basically a really dark story.
It is very creepy. And I was watching in the film, like, the thing that creeped me out the most was the two other bikers and the one guy who's like, who's just exhausted. And he's always like that. And they always have that same expression. It almost makes them feel like they're not even, like, human. And the other thing that creeped me out was in the ladies, the triplets of Belleville, like, are, you know, we can tell they're not very, they're pretty poor, and they're eating frogs. They're frog soup. And I was like, and you could see the frogs, like, going like this and looking at you, and I was like, ugh, that's creepy.
Yeah, but it is so French. It is so French to eat frogs. The creepy undertone of it, I think, makes it not a kid's movie because there's nothing that's happening that makes you laugh in a way a kid's movie makes you laugh. The things that are funny are just sort of bizarre.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and especially in the stuff in the kids' movie, even if the really good ones, there's always at least one example of like a fart joke.
Or a sidekick. There's no sidekick. Mm-hmm. There's no comic relief. The grandmother, sort of, but she's a tough character too to sort of parse for a kid. She doesn't look or act like anybody's grandma. She's got hairs, you know, on her face, and she's got a club foot, and you know, these weird glasses that make her eyes look huge, and then there's the really fat dog that barks at the train going by. That's funny, but that's funnier for adults because it's a repeated joke. It's not necessarily something a kid's going to find funny.
Yeah, there's nobody saying any catchphrases in this movie or something.
Right. Yeah, nothing like that. None of those product placements either to sell Happy Meals.
Yeah, I know. Because I was looking at this film, a couple people were, because of the surrealness of the movie with the darkness of the animation, some people were comparing this to The Wall, which was the animated film based on the Pink Floyd album. I was wondering if you see that comparison. And that's going a little bit too far because there's some really disturbing imagery in that movie. And I don't think it doesn't go to that level with this one.
Well, as soon as you say Pink Floyd, I think of mental illness because that whole Dark Side of the Moon album was all about mental illness. I don't think The Triplets of Belleville goes all the way to mental illness, although Belleville does make you think of Bellevue. But that's not intentional.
Yeah, and definitely, because even Pink Floyd, that's about a rock star who's The Wall is about a rock star who's going insane, and all that animated imagery is kind of a result of that, and you don't see that in this movie. But it's a little bit of that surrealism, I think.
Yeah, like the very square-looking G-Men, you know, I mean, and that kind of artwork is very, it's amusing, but it's not something that a kid is going to appreciate necessarily.
Yeah, and I think one thing that also kids may not be particularly fond of is that there's no dialogue at all. Actually, there's like two sentences, I think, in this movie entirely. It's no dialogue at all, and I'm not sure if, you know, kids today who are always very hyper and everything could stand like that little dialogue and everything so silent.
That's a really good point. It's very Tati-esque. It comes out of that, you know, the times of vaudeville and mimes and clowns and getting your point across without using words and having characters who carry the story, like Monsieur Hulot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very Tati-esque. Yeah, in fact, Chomet is kind of fond of those sort of characters who have either some sort of setback, you know, like the child in this movie who's, you know, his parents are gone, he's being raised by grandma, and he's lonely. But he's made some other things, like the Old Lady and the Pigeons, which is a short film that was nominated for an Academy Award. And it's about a policeman who dresses up as a pigeon so this old lady will feed him. It's sort of surreal. And then he made a film in 2013 called Attila Marcel, which is about a mute character, doesn't speak, whose aunts are kind of pressuring him to win this piano competition, which is not really unlike the story in The Triplets of Belleville. You know, you sort of have this, you know, stage grandmother pushing him to succeed in cycling.
Yeah.
And even in his, Chaumet's contribution to Paris Je T'aime, his story was about two mimes who fall in love near the Eiffel Tower. Huh. Yeah, so he sort of likes to play with that idea of, you know, how much can you get across with characters who don't, who won't just flat out tell you what they're thinking.
Yeah, and you were talking earlier about Tati, and like we talked earlier how he did a film called The Illusionist that you're not particularly fond of, but it's like almost a kind of expanding on Tati. And definitely after watching, it'll be a good double feature to first like watch Monsieur Hulot's Holiday and then watch this film, and how just how the use of silence and no lack of dialogue really helps in these two films.
You know, the interesting thing about The Illusionist is that I don't think it's a very good story, but I do think the artwork's beautiful. I think Sylvain Chaumet's artwork is stunning in that.
Yeah, and it's definitely the hand-drawn animation is very good in this movie. And like I said, you don't see that too many often now because of Pixar, starting with Toy Story 95. It's sort of been slowly moving away from that, and everything's, you know, 3D animation.
Yeah, some people are always going to like the old school style, though, where you draw everything by hand with the blue pencils that don't show up in the photocopier, and then you go over your lines with black, and then you photocopy them, and the only thing that shows up is your final overlay drawing. And then you also, I think people like that idea that there's an actual person sitting at that drafting table, and they're using one hand to flip the pages to see how the animation is going to work while they're drawing with the other. You really can't replace that with computers. You get a really cool effect, but you don't get that idea of somebody like handcrafting it.
Mm-hmm. It feels like it's more been processed through a computer instead of like it's somebody's actual work that they really worked hard on writing this and getting it down to the exact detail.
Well, when you think about Disney films, I think 101 Dalmatians stands up in a way that Beauty and the Beast doesn't. Beauty and the Beast is a marvel of what we can do on computers. But there's something really charming about the way 101 Dalmatians is drawn.
Mm-hmm. And even now you even see Disney like moving even away from animation films because they're making all the old animation films. They're doing it live action because they did that with Jungle Book earlier this year. And now they're even they're doing a live action remake of The Lion King.
Yeah. And I wonder what makes them choose these particular projects when the original was successful.
Money, 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 money. But
yeah, that's always the answer, isn't it?
Yes. And, you know, it was interesting talking about the animation. There's even a little bit, like, at the very beginning of the film, that whole film is like a little homage to, like, early 1920s, 1930s Disney movies. Because you have the people hopping around like they always would do. And it does feel like the jazz music. And it does feel like it's an old, like, Mickey Mouse cartoon.
It does. And it's a nice intro where they introduce the triplets when they're younger. They show you the town. So when you come back to it, you realize you've been there before. They have that great sequence with Josephine Baker, mm-hmm. and then the one of Fred Astaire where he gets eaten by his shoes. That actually I can see kids laughing at, but they wouldn't know who Fred Astaire was.
Yeah. Definitely. There's a lot of little French culture odes in this movie. Like you said, there's Josephine Baker. There's also, and then that opening scene, there's also Django Reinhardt on the guitar, and he's so good with it. He's playing it on his feet.
And yes, then, of course, and you notice he is missing a couple of fingers, and they even animated, you know, a two-fingered glove for him.
He actually fingers in real life? Oh, I didn't know that. And I know another film that another silent movie star that also like Tati is Charlie Chaplin, a little bit in this movie, not a heck of a lot, but a little bit. It's the one scene where, you know, it's at the beginning and he's a kid and, you know, he sort of start, you know, the grandmother decides to get him into bike racing, and it's, you know, you see the countryside, it's very quiet, and think of it, then flashback 15, 20 years later, the whole city's taken over, and they barely can't even fit the house. It's like creaking to the side because they got to put in the rail line.
That's right. They built the railway right up next to the house. Yeah, that is kind of, Charlie, that's like the gold rush.
Yeah, a little bit of that and a little bit of modern times, I'd say.
Yes. Yep, good eye.
And you were talking a little bit earlier about the grandmother. Now, you say she's pushing, but it seems like at the beginning of the film when she was trying to get him something and he's interested in, and she, you know, when she looks at, because was it her husband that died, was a biker, or was it her son?
I thought it was her son.
It was her son. Okay, I wasn't quite sure on that. But it seems like she sighs a little bit. Do you feel like that she was reluctant in letting him get into this?
You know, first she gives him the dog. You know, it's like, what do you do for a lonely kid? You get him a dog. You know, so you see the dog show up early on and then turn into this caricature of a dog. And then, you know, you can see she wants to find something to get him out of his funk. I think the sigh is just, it's hard. You know, it's hard to be a single parent and also to deal with the child who's grieving. You know, that's not easy. You have to try to find something. to take their mind off of it.
Yeah, and and Champion is also some guy who, like, especially watch him and later in the film, he's also like a lot like the other bikers. He's very a little bit creepy. He always just has the same, you know, expression, like he's sad. And, you know, he, even when he's being rescued and everything, he's not at, like, emoting or like, what's going on here? He's just, same thing. So it almost feels like he's just so caught up in biking. He doesn't really care about, and like necessarily care, but just notice anything else except biking.
Well, plus he just, his muscles are just so ropey. You know, yeah. That doesn't look comfortable. It doesn't look like he can ever really relax. And there's all those strange things that his grandmother uses to try to massage the kinks out, like the egg beater, or the, what is it, a lawnmower?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just all kinds of crazy things. And when she's doing them, you're cringing, thinking, that just doesn't look like that would help.
And then he's not the only, like, I think all the bikers you saw that were riding, they all have that knot and twisted thing in their legs.
And you know that scene where they're being used to, like, power something, they actually did something with Lance Armstrong one time. There was a commercial where the you know, somebody opens a closet and it's Lance Armstrong who's pedaling, who's keeping the lights on.
Oh yeah.
And they just sort of shut the door on him again before he was found out to be a drug cheater. So it was a great commercial for its time.
Yeah, I kind of remember that. That was kind of when he was on that run, and you know, it does add to that creepiness in the film. Like you said, you cringe. Like, I was like, oh, that looks terrible. Like when she's nodding out the thing with the egg beater and everything, it does add to that creepiness of the movie.
But it's also very, very personal. I mean, you usually don't see a rendering of someone's muscles that extreme. It feels, I don't know, there's something very unsettling about it. But there's a lot of unsettling things.
Oh, yeah.
There's like the triplets, like you say, who are, you know, they look like they don't have very much money, but they wear these old coats with these furs, and the furs are like, you know, dead ferrets for collars and stuff. I know that was a fashion, but it adds to the, you know, the sort of, not a horror movie, but a very dark story where you're acknowledging all of the slimy underbelly that goes on you usually don't see.
Yeah, and even I was really surprised at the dark turn when that exhausted biker who's like that, and he finally can't do it anymore, do that machine anymore, and so the gangster pulls out the gun and just shoots him. I was like, wow, I didn't see that coming in the animated movie.
Yeah. Yeah, real dark. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's, like you said, the creepy frogs who all look like, well, you know, one of the triplets catches them by throwing a stick of dynamite into the water.
that part was hilarious.
Hysterically funny. But, you know, the frogs, they look a little stunned. And then, of course, one of them tries to escape.
Mm-hmm. And it's the way they look at you. It's like that's something that's going to give you some nightmares as they look at you like, you're going to kill me, aren't you?
Yeah, and it's not just the frog soup. It's the frog slop and the frog popsicles. I mean, everything is made out of frogs.
So do the French really eat frogs, or is that like
No, that's a real thing. Yeah, frog legs are very, very big.
Oh, I always thought that was just like a negative stereotype.
No, they're actually delicious.
You eat? Oh, you've had it before?
Yeah, and I know it's a cliche, but they really do taste like chicken.
Okay. First that, and then snails, man. Okay.
Then there's also, I don't know if it's intentional, but, you know, it's a slur to call French people frogs. So.
Yeah, I figured, because I thought that was added to that stereotype. And it was the thing that was interesting. It was the town of Belleville itself, because it's like, it was in France, but I assumed like they went all the way to America, because one of the first things you see is the Statue of Liberty. And I thought it was like making some commentary on like the American obesity rate, because the Statue of Liberty is really fat. And I thought it's because, like, you know, everybody you see is pretty hefty. So I was thinking like maybe they're making a commentary on us, like we're all obese, we're all out of shape and unhealthy.
I think there is a deliberate attempt to show consumerism making people fat, because you do have these large people peddling these humongous burgers and stuff like that. But the town of Belleville was intended to be a mashup between New York City, Paris, and Montreal.
Hmm.
So it gets kind of the flavor of all three of those in there at the same time.
And I also thought I saw a little bit of London, because I thought one of the buildings looked a bit like Big Ben.
Could be.
Yeah. You even talk about that scene with the scene when they're at the diner. And it's hamburger, and I forget, like, they can't pay it or something.
Right. Yeah, she opens her little purse, and a moth comes out.
Oh, and she says, no hamburger.
Yes. No money, no burger.
And so, do you feel that the film, in a way, because somebody was going on, I was kind of looking up stuff online about this movie, and somebody was saying, like, this film is so great, and it just sticks its nose or gives the finger to the Disney people. Do you feel that, like, it's somewhat mocking Disney films, or do you feel that that was just not real? Because of the hand-drawn and, like, saying, this is more like this, and you should move away from, like, the Pixar stuff.
I think it's its own genre. I didn't see it as any sort of up yours to Disney. It's very different. I mean, it did remind me when I first watched it of 101 Dalmatians, that sort of watercolor style. But I think it's just a more modern take on what we do these days rather than any sort of response to what Disney does.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. You know, the thing I liked about this film was, you know, the music. I mean, when you hear that, the Belleville Rendezvous song, that's like a song that you're never going to get out of your head.
Yeah, but it's better. It's one of those songs that does stick with you, but in a good way, unlike, say, like the zither music in The Third Man, which as soon as you remember it, it's like, oh, man, when is that going to leave? No, it's a great song. It was nominated for Best Song at the Oscars.
And this film actually took off really big. It was big here, also at Oscar nomination. And interesting, going back to this thing about the Disney conflict, it was nominated for Best Animated Film, but this was 2003, and it lost to Finding Nemo.
But how do you compete with Nemo? I mean, it's a sweet story. And you know, just in terms of the saturation of colors, you know, Triplets is a little sepia, you know, sort of darkish, like hearkening to another time. It's a little bit nostalgic, but it's not. It's sort of an animation which makes you think it's for kids, but it's not. Nemo is just flat out exactly what you expect an animated story to be. It's a sweet story with engaging characters, and the artwork's beautiful because, you know, how can a story about underwater creatures not be beautiful? That's a hard sell.
Yeah, do you think because maybe this wasn't quite the, you know, it's not your children's animated film for Belleville, do you think that really hurt it, and so that was kind of made it a unanimous decision to go to Nemo?
No, I think Nemo was probably a better movie for some of the reasons I mentioned, but I see where you're going with this, which is that, you know, where does this stand in, like, the pantheon of films? You know, did it get ignored because of Nemo? You know, I think a lot of times when something wins the Academy Award, people already know that one. Mm-hmm. And then they see if you're a fan. You know, you look at what else was nominated and you say, well, let's see what, you know, the first and second and third, fourth, fifth runner-ups are all about. Sometimes you get a little audience that way. But I think the audience for Triplets of Belleville is not really the same audience as Nemo anyway.
Yeah, definitely. And it was interesting. So is there... I'm not quite familiar with the state of French. Is there a lot of French animated films, or is?
Yeah, France is actually, they're pioneers in early animation. They invented some of the foundational technologies of early animation, and there's some stuff coming out now. Look for something called April and the Extraordinary World, which is a sci-fi animated adventure, and the voice will be Marion Cotillard.
Marion Cotillard?
Okay. Also, Chaumet is working on something that sounds like it's going to be really interesting. It's based on some old drawings and things from Fellini.
Oh.
So I'm really interested to see what he's going to do with that, because I think he's got a real eye for interesting things to look at. Mm-hmm. He does tend to go to the grotesque. You know, there's almost like a Flannery O'Connor aspect to it, where, you know, it's a perfectly ordinary story, and yet there's something about it that's sort of uneasy,
kind of creepy.
Creepy, yeah.
The dog, like, I like the dog. The dog is definitely
the dog's hilarious,
funny, but even he looks a little bit creepy because he's very big, but he has these tiny little legs, like little like stick legs, but he's got this huge body.
And when you see him going up and down the stairs, you're thinking he's going to wreck.
Yeah.
At any moment now, that dog is going down.
I do love the little dream sequences you have. It's hilarious because, you know, the running joke is whenever the train goes by, he barks at it, and he's barking at the people in there. But when he has the dream, it's the train going by, and there's the people in the train who are barking at him. And that's really funny.
The other grotesque thing is the food. You know, the slop that Grandma puts together, which is supposed to look like sardines, potatoes, and fish bones. But it just looks like... gross. Of course, the dog will eat it. And you notice the champion eats enough that the scale will finally tip, you know, and then he stops, and then the dog just gobbles it all down. But even that looks disgusting. And the sound effect is something that they did with a sponge and some water.
Oh, yeah.
Makes it sound all splorchy and
Yeah, the other thing I really liked in this film is like the sound effects. Like you said, that spongy stuff creeps you out. But even that scene when they do like the improv music scene at the dance hall with all the like the newspaper and
yeah,
the scene, that was also really good.
And the refrigerator grate and the vacuum cleaner. Yeah, it reminded me of Stomp.
Yes.
Old Lady Stomp. The another sound effect that they put together that I think was effective is they used a glove with some paper clips for the dog's toenails on the floor. Hmm. And sort of click, 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 because dogs can't retract their toenails. And they made the set sort of tilted. That's another thing that gives you the sense of unease. It's almost like a German expressionist painting. You know, the set's sort of off. Everything's a little bit crooked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also expressionist is I really like the use of shapes in this film. But the one thing that had me laughing was the gangsters. And they're all very square. They have, like, these extremely large square shoulders.
Yes, and like the G-men.
Yeah, and when they're even they kind of meet together, it almost looks like they're combining to be this giant
yes.
square man. The shapes in this film, like that also really stuck out for me.
Yeah, that was very well done, too. And it was a way to, like you say, give the sort of sense of a wall of people because they like snap together like Legos or something like that. Mm-hmm.
And then you have the head gangster who's like extremely small, but he has this
huge nose.
And he's like, when he's watching the show, he's looking like right, you know, he's kneeling over and his nose is hanging over the railing.
Yeah, and he looks shifty. And it's not just a big nose, it's a big red nose, like he's an alcoholic or something.
Yeah, you were talking earlier a little bit about Sylvain Chomet and his other movies. So of his other, I know like we talked about The Illusionist, which you're not that fond of, but what like other films of his that you are fond of besides this?
Well, The Old Lady and the Pigeons, I think is, that's his short film that's really very amusing. I think Triplets of Belleville is the best thing he's done. But Attila Marcel, which I mentioned briefly, is about the mute character whose aunts are pressuring him to win these piano competitions. That's so his wheelhouse, you know. And, you know, to have a character that, you know, you have to watch their face and expressions and what they do to develop the character. It's very much like how Tati would explore it. It's, you know, rather than have the character talk to other characters so you get to know them or directly towards the camera, you just sort of observe.
Mm-hmm. And you're talking earlier that he's doing a new film. It's supposed to be on like Lost Drawings of Fellini. Do you know when that's coming out?
It is in production now. I have the name of it here somewhere. It's called The Thousand Miles. It's live action and animation based on various works of Fellini, including his unpublished drawings and writings. So that should be interesting. I'm not sure when that's coming out.
But yeah, definitely, especially when you watch 8.5 and how kind of a little bit surreal that film gets after a while. Definitely feel like it definitely fits his style because it could really fit that darkness of this movie.
Yeah, I think he could probably do something very interesting with it, especially if it's supposed to be going through people's old diaries and pictures and whatever. You know, you get that sepia-toned feel of, well, we're going to go back to the past and explore something. I can see him doing a lot with that, actually.
Okay. And so we're getting close to the end of my questions here. Is there anything I forgot to talk about or bring up that you want to bring up now?
Well, I don't want to discourage anybody from seeing The Illusionist because, if you just watch it for the art is fantastic. I think it was a mistake to make the character look too much like Tati and like Monsieur Hulot. I don't think that Tati intended it to be, that story to be a cartoon. But it's but the artwork is spectacular. I don't think he's ever done any bad artwork, I should say. Mm-hmm.
And we talked earlier about the Fellini, like that. You said that the Illusionist was based off some lost ideas that Tati never got around to.
Yeah, that was an unfinished screenplay that he was working on. I don't know how he would have felt about Chomet because Chomet's stuff always kind of looks sort of like the French Addams Family. You know, did you get that feeling with
yeah.
the triplets? You know, like sort of the.
I can see that.
They're perfectly nice people once you get to know them, but there's something really bizarre about them. And that bizarreness is not something that Tati really did. He wasn't weird. He was odd, but he didn't make you feel uncomfortable.
I guess one of the last questions I'll ask you is, put you a little bit on the spot here. So with this hand-drawn animation, you really liked it. Would you say that you enjoy this more than, like, say, something from Pixar or just like 3D animation? I know I keep hammering that point over, but
I hate to choose both because that's a cop out. But I love the hand-drawn animation. But it's really difficult not to love what they do out of Pixar because it is so charming and it's so innovative, and I love 3D. What do you think? I'll throw it back on you.
Oh, okay. I knew I was going to get that thrown out. I like both. I do like the movies, most of the movies from Pixar, and you can do a lot of great things with 3D. But I just it does bother me that that's all we're doing now, and I would like to see somebody go back to more hand-drawn. Or even like our, you know, some people still do the claymation. Like I know Kubo and the Two Strings was going back to that. So I'd just like to see somebody do a little. You can have this cool technology and do great things, and you can do great movies with it, like at Pixar. But maybe don't go away from that. I'm not saying that, but go to hand drawn a bit more. Do some more hand drawn. Try that out. You know, go back to that a bit.
You know, I think the best thing about going to see a Pixar movie in the theater is that you get to see the short that they could make to go on the DVD, and I think their shorts are brilliant. Maybe what Pixar should do is concentrate on making awesome shorts that introduce old style or really artistic forms of animation.
That's really interesting. And I was curious, because I watched Finding Dory this year. Did you see that little short
Loved
one?
Loved it. Yes.
I like that one too.
Yeah, there was the Sandpiper, I think was
Yeah, that was, I like that one. Okay, and then last question I have, and once again, we've seen this all the time, but tell us about how you've been bringing this film into your French film course.
I showed some clips from Triplets of Belleville when I was talking about Tati in my French film class, because, you know, it was the Illusionist was the last thing Tati wrote, even though he had nothing to do with the way it came to pass. And the fun thing also about the clips that I showed in Triplets is there is a scene there where there's a movie poster of Monsieur Hulot's Holiday. So I used it as a way to sort of bring in Tati and talk about current day directors like Sylvain Chomet.
Okay. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been talking today about director Sylvain Chomet and his animated film, The Triplets of Belleville. Don't forget, you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Tuesday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at armchairdirectors.podomatic.com. Professor Westhaver, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. For The Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying, I think that's probably it. It's over, Grandma.